Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Syrian refugee Abdul Razak
Ajazarelli.
So tell me a little bit about your disabilities journey.
I am vision loss. I lost my vision when I was 8 years old. My vision started last. Each year it was more bad, I can say. And after that, when I was 21 years old, that's what I remember, I lost most of my vision.
So, I understand you're a refugee from Syria. Have you been able to find the appropriate support since arriving in Canada?
What I get support from Canada?
Yes, sir.
I got many things. The first things that it helped me to continue my life as a refugee in Canada, there is monthly income, and also there is CINB Foundation for Blind People. This is foundation, especially for blind people, I think. They helped me. How can I walk in the street? How can I discover my building on the street that's close to my building? And how can I cross the street? And also, I applied for guide dog. I was so interested about that. Also, there is taxi script for if I need to go by taxi to shopping. And the transportation, I have the card for transportation to go to school. I think without any cost. There is a charity, but I don't remember now what it's called. Yeah, Mobility Plus. They helped me to get to school every day, many times. Thank you for them. That's what I can say it briefly.
So, when you were first diagnosed with your vision loss, how did you react?
How I deal with my vision loss as a vision loss,
yes.
Felt, right?
Yes. How did you?
It was a very difficult situation to be blind in Syria or any country like Syria. It's very difficult. Because there is no support for blind people. and everything. If you didn't get any support in this situation, you will feel very frustrated. Sorry. Everything difficult, but I can say there is some points in my life positive. I could continue complete my education in Syria. I got university degree for 4 years. I studied about Islam study, but also after I graduated, I didn't find any job. And finally, I got job in Syria, but it was this is my suffering. This is my suffering. It was my suffering in Syria, too far from my apartment, and it was the monthly income very lower. And I have to pay more for taxi and everything, for taxi, for transportation in general. Because of that, also, basically, my monthly income, it was lower and became more lower. This is what it was, my suffering.
So, how have you found things have changed since you arrived here in Canada? Do you find that we're well set up, or do we still have some progress to make?
You're talking about? Are you talking about the program as the in the CINB Foundation? How did I found?
I'm wondering, since you've arrived in Canada, do you find we have more supports to help you as a person with a vision impairment?
It was, yes, it was the best things in here in Canada. As I mentioned, there is monthly income for blind people, for disability people, and also for another people, but especially for blind people. I am talking about me as a vision loss. Also, that makes you in a stable situation, and you can think about tomorrow. You will be maybe better for better, and you can study. You can depression or anxiety or anxious. How can I finish my studying? Or I wanna finish this, quickly. I wanna find job. Like that, but it makes me in stable situation at first. And also, I was so happy because you can explain your suffering, and you can talk and explain your suffering and ask to help. It's very different to any Arab country. It's difficult to explain your suffering. For example, in Syria, I couldn't complain. It's too far. They told me that's what available for you. I cannot change my job, for example. I cannot do anything, do any change. But here, surprise. What I understood, vision loss don't allow to job if this job or place work not safe for blind people. I was so happy about that. For example.
So, what else would you like people to know about your journey?
What I would like to say or to people, I am just lost my vision. I have a brain. I have feelings. I can do anything if I want it. Just what I different, my situation different is my vision. Just I lost my vision. Everything same you, my friends, but just I lost my vision.
Thank you very much for taking the time. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Dr. Iris Kolbatsky, who'll be telling us a little bit about wheel dance. So what can you tell me about wheel dance?
Wheel Dance is a federally incorporated Canadian nonprofit. We've been around since 2014. We offer subsidized wheelchair ballroom and Latin dance classes to wheelchair users and their standing partners, whether it's a community member or friends or family. And we have two streams. We have social dancing and we have competitive and showcase dancing. We're also an associate member of Canada Dance Sport, and we're the Canadian Para Dance Sport organizing body. So that's for competitive para dance sport.
So how does para dance compare to the able-bodied equivalent? Are there many variations?
In terms of competition, there's a need to classify dancers. So by classify, I mean that prior to a competition, an athlete would be seen by a medical professional, either a physiotherapist or somebody else with a background in being able to assess the physical abilities. And athletes are put into a class. Basically, it's a way of leveling the playing field so that those with the same level of ability are competing against each other. And that's something that you don't see in able-bodied dance sport. In terms of the types of dances, it's quite similar, actually. There's some options for whether it's two wheelchair dancers competing or a wheelchair dancer and a standing partner, or a solo wheelchair dancer. So there's options in that sense, but the dances themselves are the same for the most part.
So how do you go about reaching out to the disability community to recruit dancers and to let people know that the organization exists?
Well, we're fortunate to have a nice network with some of the other parasport organizations. So we're affiliated in that way. We also go to disability expos, so we get the word out like that. We go out to the community, we do workshops and performances, and we're fortunate to be invited to be interviewed by the media. So thank you for that, Cam. We've also been interviewed on television as well in the past, and in print.
So what are some of the challenges associated with training a para dancer?
I would say the biggest challenge is actually not in the training itself, but it's in convincing people that dance is something they can actually participate in. Because very often, someone who hasn't heard about para dance sport or even social dancing, they think, well, this is not something I can do. And we suggest it to them, and they say, oh, no, but I'm a wheelchair user. I can't dance. And it takes a bit of convincing. And when they see our other dancers dance and they come out to try a class, I think that's all that it usually takes to convince them. They get hooked pretty quickly. In terms of the instruction itself, we have some really skilled professionals on our team, with a wide background in different types of dance. So they're pros. They know how to get people dancing.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the benefits that a para dancer might enjoy by actually participating and getting some strength and practice in that?
Yeah, we get some really positive feedback from our participants. A lot of them say that in terms of the physical benefits, it improves their range of motion and their balance and their upper body strength, coordination, things like that. But there are also a lot of tremendous emotional and social benefits. So I think a lot of people come out to our classes because of the social aspect as well, and the friendships that are created on and off the dance floor. And it's a great mood booster.
So, in your time with Wheel Dance, is there any success story that stands out for you?
I think every time I see our participants on the dance floor, it's a success story. We've had many competitions over the years. We host a yearly competition in collaboration with Canada Dance Sport and Ontario Dance Sport. So as an organization, that's been a nice win for us to have established that. And we're the first North American we've trained the first cohort in North America of classifiers, of pair dance sport classifiers. So our national head of classification, he's trained by the International Paralympic Committee, and he's actually the only pair dance sport classifier in all of the Americas. So that's a huge win for us. We're really proud of that, and we're hoping to pave the way for pair dance sport in Canada and in North America as well. In terms of our dancers, as I said, every time they get out on the dance floor, it's a win. It's just such a pleasure to see them enjoying themselves, and we get tremendous feedback. And as I said, there's beautiful friendships that are formed on and off the dance floor.
So, are there any myths about para dance that you encounter from the able-bodied community or those who just generally wouldn't be familiar with it?
I think in the showcases that our dancers have performed in and at the competitions as well, we've had very positive feedback. In fact, for the most part, I would say able-bodied dancers, they get very emotional when they see our dancers on the dance floor. And because most of the dances that we teach are a wheelchair dancer partnered with a standing partner, it's such a beautiful way to promote communication between those with a disability and those without. And really, as I said, the connection on and off the dance floor with our volunteers and our dancers and other community members is just, has been beautiful. So in terms of myths, that's a good question. I don't know if it's a myth or a bias, you know. And sometimes the biases come from all directions, including wheelchair users, in that, as I mentioned before, they think, you know, it's not something they can necessarily participate in.
So what message would you send to all those out there who might be struggling with those questions of, is this something I can really see myself doing? Is this something I'm capable of doing?
I would say absolutely yes. If you can move your chair in a controlled way and you can follow a beat, then absolutely yes, you can dance. Absolutely.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you're a member of the U Windsor or Windsor Detroit communities and are looking for a creative outlet, CJAM FM is accepting new volunteers. Host your very own radio show or get involved in our other opportunities, all from the comfort of your own home. Check us out online at cjam.ca for more information, at CJAM FM on social media, or reach out to us directly by emailing programcjam@gmail.com. Become a volunteer at your local campus community radio station, CJAM FM 99.1.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Syrian refugee Abdul Razak Jazerlem about his disability story, and from Dr. Iris Golbatsky about wheel dance. In this segment of our show, our friend Nama Weingarten will be telling us a little bit about a recent workshop and reporting on misrepresented communities. So at the recent workshop, why did you think it was important to include the disability community as a misrepresented or underrepresented group?
I would say because they are a misrepresented and underrepresented group. At least in my experience in the media, even from the times that I interviewed you, you know, you've told me so many times how the media often misrepresents, you know, the disabled community and how, you know, little coverage you get when it comes to disabled issues or even sports or anything. The community just doesn't get the coverage it deserves. And when it does, journalists often, you know, feel the need to take pity on the disabled community or just represent them in a way that isn't true to the way they see themselves. So I thought it was necessary to include them.
So when you were putting it together, how did your colleagues react to this idea?
I mean, I wouldn't even say there was much of a reaction. They all kind of just agreed instantly. I think it was just kind of a given that they would be a part of it.
So in that sense, do you find that these issues of representation can be sort of multifaceted in that there might be issues surrounding, say, different cultures, and then there's cultural issues concerning disabilities as well?
You mean like the way that, you know, culture and disability intersect?
Yes. Issues.
I mean...
Go ahead.
You mean, like, did we talk about it during the workshop, or...?
I mean, do you think that some of the matters discussed about cultural sensitivity and knowing how to approach certain matters might also have a bearing on how you approach someone with a disability, given the idea of intersectionality?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, always. You always want to keep that in mind. I mean, any kind of aspect about anybody's identity that you're interviewing should, you know, come into play, whether it's their culture, disability, or both, right? You want to always get their full life experience, ask them how it's, you know, those experiences have intersected in their lives before, ask them how they view themselves. I think that's extremely important.
So, in your experience as a journalist, have you ever seen these issues coming together?
In my experience, actually... yes, not so much with race or culture, but a recent article that I wrote actually about an unsolved murder. The victim of the murder was actually, he was openly gay throughout his life, and he was also disabled. He actually had both of his legs amputated a few years before he died, and he was wheelchair bound. And covering him and his life, I made sure to, you know, include and talk about all these sorts of things. I made sure to talk about his life and his contributions to the gay community in the story, and how he's volunteered at, you know, Casey House, which was the first standalone hospital for AIDS in Toronto, and I believe in Toronto or in all of Canada. I don't remember the exact details, but you know, he managed a coffee shop, and he donated a lot of money to free printing for gay businesses, and it was just, and at the same time, I'm trying to incorporate information about his disability as well. You know, his friends told me how he felt when he lost his legs and the difficulties that he faced, but also the way he overcame that and the way that he actually learned to integrate it into his life and was still happy after that and was still himself. I made sure to include that in the story because all these details, I mean, that's a part of who he was, right?
So that's sort of a key thing right there, giving full representation. If you focus solely on a person's disability, you miss the complete picture of who they are as an individual.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
So with the success of this workshop, do you see any future opportunities to do more like this?
I just got a message. But yeah, I would love to, you know, in like more opportunities to do a workshop like this.
Yes, to continue to give a voice to all those groups out there that just need people to go in with an understanding that they're a person first.
Of course. I mean, whether it's at my time at the radio station, you know, doing workshops, or whether it's just me as a journalist for the rest of my career, I will always continue. You know, I don't personally like to use the phrase giving a voice because,
you know, I don't necessarily think anybody is voiceless. Everyone has a voice. It's just about having a platform to express that voice. But I would love to give people the platform and the opportunity to express their voice and their identity of who they are at any stage of my journalism career in the future, whether it's through workshops or through the things that I cover, or even one day from an editor if it comes to the stories I decide to commission and the sources I talk to. It's all extremely important.
So what message would you send to the community about the need for equal representation?
What kind of message? That's a tough one. There's a lot of messages I would send. There's a lot of things to say about it. But I would say that when you're a journalist and you're covering issues, especially communities that you are not a part of, you really need to be even more open-minded than you are already. Really kind of let go of your own preconceived notions of anything, because you're different. And just really be all open and listening in and understanding and put yourself in other people's shoes. You really need that skill. And just be very, very open and understand that there's never, ever one story in a situation. There are multiple stories and there's never one truth. There's usually multiple truths. Always keep that in mind.
So, they always tell people in our profession to separate us from the story, but I think you have to really actually engage with a community to really have a passion for what goes on with them to cover effectively.
Yeah, because it also weighs into the issue of trust, right? A lot of communities don't trust journalists, right? So if you come in and you act like you don't care, you don't form those connections, you don't try to get to know those people and who they are, and it'll cost you. I mean, they won't want to talk to you, and rightfully so. Right? When it comes to these vulnerable communities, you want to make sure to have connections. Certain people that I've interviewed, I didn't even get right into the interview when I met them. I maybe took them out for coffee first, just talk to them, right? That's so important. You want to make sure to base that trust and that love, and that way they'll also be there for you for future stories as well.
So, what are the next steps for you as you push for giving an equal opportunity and representation?
Next step for me, I would say, I'm not a company owner or some kind of, there isn't necessarily anything I can really do besides myself and the things I do in my own reporting. Of course, there's the workshops for the station as well. But, every story that I do, I always think about the different voices that I need to have in it. Even if it's not a story that has to do with disability or race or sexuality, even if it's just, a story that doesn't regard any specific community, do I have voices from different communities? Because that's still important, right? So if I am reporting about a story that's about a certain community, how can I represent that? So I think the best thing I can do to support marginalized communities in my reporting is just, to continue being open-minded. And, if any one of my colleagues ever needs help, I'll always help push them in the right direction when it comes to gathering sources or the way they their questions or write out their stories. But I think it's really one of the most important things we gotta do, I guess, is educate ourselves. Be open to educate yourself.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Of course, yeah.
Our Syrian refugee friend showed remarkable strength and courage. The truth is, we have to remember, it's not the end of his story. The hardship, I mean. Coming out of a place like that, and difficult circumstances, one can appreciate all the more some of the amazing gifts that do exist for the disability community. But, as with any other time or any other place, it's up to us, as people, to know and to assert our rights, and to let people know that we are strong, valuable, contributing members of society. It's not the place of anyone, no matter who they are or where they are, to look down on another's abilities, to assume they're incapable. For regardless of what the disability may be, regardless of the background, we all have something to contribute. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.